Welcome to episode 218 of the Various Discovery Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Harmon, joined live from our virtual studio on the internet by my good friend, my colleague, my co-host, and the man who is roughing it in South Carolina, John Scott Sloat.
Doc, what's happening?
Well, we're in the virtual studio because you're on the road again.
Yep. I'm in states that have primaries, and there's no shortage of yard signs for presidential candidates.
Hasn't South Carolina already had theirs?
Yes. I was just in South Carolina, though, and that's where I saw them. So
okay.
I don't know if North Carolina, does North Carolina vote on Super Tuesday?
I don't know. The amount that I'm following it is pretty minimal, to be honest.
So all I'll say is I saw some presidential yard signs out on the road.
Okay.
And gotcha. That's something I'm not seeing in Indiana.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, Indiana's primaries are so late that really we have no voice in the process. So, and that's about as much politics as we'll talk. So
yard signs. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Yep. So, let's see here. If you'd like to talk to us via social media, you can find us on X at VNS Pod. You can email the show, variousandsundrypodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook and on YouTube, and we would love for you to leave a 5-star rating and a review. So before we jump into sports, we should probably note on the day that we're recording this, we're having a heat wave by March standards here in northern Indiana. It's a balmy, what is it, 70? It's right around 70, which might be as warm as it is there, right?
Yeah, it's about the same. It's wow. About the same here. Isn't that wild that it's the same temp? That's just incredible.
Yeah, I think I was reading recently that we have, this has been like the mildest winter in a long time here in northern Indiana.
Bring it on.
Yeah, amen. I'm all here
Sounds
for
great.
It. Yes.
Being able to get outside is a treasure in the winter.
It is. All right, John, let's talk some sports here. Let's start with, let's do a little NBA.
Okay.
We had a little milestone happen over the weekend.
LeBron.
Yeah. First player to score 40,000 points.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. I mean, at some measure, it's a feat of longevity.
Yes.
That he's just been around so long.
Yeah, but someone posted this on Twitter, basically like looking at how many games it took him to go from 0 to 10,000, and then from 10,000 to 20,000. So basically, how long it took him to score, how many games it took him to score each of his like chunks of 10,000. And what's really surprising to me, at least, is it's basically been a steady pace. Like it took him about the same number of games, I think, to go from 10 to 20 as it did for him to go 30 to 40.
Wow.
And they're all within like a range. It's around 350 games. So he's scoring about 10,000 points every 350-ish games. And so, you know, I'm not intending us to get derailed onto a, you know, who's the GOAT conversation. But I do think his longevity is something that should be factored into that conversation.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't seem to be slowing down too much either. Like, I think in the last couple of years, there's been a little slowdown, but he's still pretty dominant out there on the floor.
Yeah.
Still moving really well. I mean, he missed a couple games last year to injury, but that's the only time, other than when he cramped in San Antonio, that's the only time I can remember him missing time for an injury.
Yeah. I mean, his durability, his longevity is something that, you know, is unmatched. I mean, I think, you know, sometimes you see these graphics where it's players who played at his age and what they averaged. You know, and LeBron's averaging, 20, 23, 24 a game probably. And, nobody else scored in average like double figures at this age.
When do we begin to compare LeBron to Jerry Rice?
Well, I mean, across you're talking across sports, obviously. So,
Yeah. But just in the sense that like both these guys were dominant from a young age, really took care of themselves physically so they could be able to do this be very successful late in their careers. I think that might be my LeBron comparison, that he's the Jerry Rice of the NBA.
Certainly in that sense, yes. I don't know. I think Jerry Rice, although he took care of himself, was not a like freakish physical specimen. He was no like DK Metcalf or anything where you're like, oh my gosh, that guy's 6'4" and runs a 4.440. Like that's not humanly possible
It
and that
looks like
shouldn't
you can
happen.
eat me. Yeah.
Yeah. He was amazing, but he didn't he wasn't amazing because he was just a physical specimen. And LeBron is more than a physical specimen, but he is at least that in terms of his
Oh, yeah.
athleticism and 6'8" and but yeah, I don't think the NBA has ever seen a player who takes care of his body like LeBron James.
Yeah, I mean, I remember a couple of years ago it came out that he spent $1 million each offseason on his physical health.
Yeah, that's believable. And
And I don't know what all that entails. I imagine personal trainers, massages, cupping, what have you.
does
But
that include his chef? Because I know he's got his own personal chef, so
it probably does. Yeah. It probably does. But
yeah,
yeah, it's impressive, his longevity and 40,000 points and he may get to 50.
Oh, I don't know that he's going to play another. He'd have to play another. If we're going 350 games, if he could even keep that pace, I mean, that's another, what is that? Three and a half, no, four and a half seasons. I don't know.
I don't know that I'm ready to say we're in the last 4 years of LeBron's career. Maybe. But I think he still has another contract in him.
Probably. I did catch a little bit of NBA action. Was that last night? It was last night. Your Knicks.
Yeah, Knicks Cavs. I watched that on a plane, actually.
They,
So it was on ESPN.
yeah. So that's a good win for the Knicks because the Knicks had several players out and it was at Cleveland.
Yeah, we had four starters out. Now Donovan Mitchell was out of that game for the Cavs. So,
Yeah.
do what you will. But DiVincenzo had a good game. They play a fun brand of basketball. They're a lot of fun to watch. Josh Hart had a triple double, something like
Yeah.
19 rebounds as a guard. Yeah, he's a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Yeah, I just don't know that anybody in the East is probably going to get past the Celtics this year. The Celtics seem like a pretty significant step ahead of everybody in the East.
Yeah, that's my sense as well. That's my sense as well.
And then the West feels wide open to me.
Oh yeah.
But we'll see.
This is the time to start paying attention for sure.
It is what there's probably like 25-ish,
Yeah,
twenty
I think that's
25
right.
games left, something in that range before the before the playoffs slash play in game starts. Let's talk a little college basketball.
Okay.
Let's talk on the women's side, which we don't often do, as in basically never. Caitlin Clark set the all-time NCAA scoring record. She'd already held the women's record, but now she eclipsed the men's record, formerly held by Pete Maravich, in their win over Ohio State yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know what to say other than Caitlin Clark has kind of become a phenom, and I did not see the game last night, but it does seem like celebrities are coming out of the woodwork to see. I mean, it seems like it's a
Yeah,
spectacle
it
that
is.
people are really drawn to her ability to
Yeah.
shoot and play basketball really, really well. It'll be interesting to see, does that follow her beyond Iowa, and does that go to the WNBA? Does that gotta get eyeballs on the WNBA? I'm skeptical personally.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. It's interesting. I think the WNBA, I think it's just a different animal than college basketball. I mean, and I just don't know what you have. The advantage you have with college basketball is people already affiliated with an institution suddenly get excited about a generational talent. And that term is overused, but it is absolutely applicable here, in terms of Caitlin Clark. So you've already got people who are, all on board with Iowa. They're alums, they're already connected to the institution. And then there's this generational basketball player that comes up from within their ranks, and they're like, oh, and then that starts to build. I don't think you don't have that at the professional women's level.
No, I think that's right. I mean, I struggle to even name the teams in the
Oh yeah.
WNBA.
And I think, I mean,
York
I think,
Liberty, I think that's a team. The Seattle Sparks, maybe? I don't know.
I mean, I think there will be an initial bump when she goes to the league next year. I think there'll be an initial attendance bump, and ESPN will bend over backwards to make sure that just about every game of hers for the first like 2 weeks is going to be on TV, because they're going to try to capitalize on the ratings. But I just don't see it having staying power. And I'm confident that she is going to have a target on her back when she comes into the league, because all of these WNBA players are at least, well, all, that's too strong. I'm sure many of them are jealous of the attention, and it's sort of the like, who does she think she is? She thinks she's going to come in here and, put up those kind of numbers, and we're going to make sure she's not. So I think there'll be some additional attention paid to her.
I think that's probably right. I think she'll put, I'm she may not put up the same numbers, but she'll put up good numbers.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think she's going to eventually be, one of the five best players in the WNBA. It'll be interesting to see how long that transition takes. I will say, and I did watch a chunk of this game yesterday. I don't know that I've ever seen a player more protected by the officials than Caitlin Clark. I mean, she got a technical foul called on an Ohio State player. Like, she literally is walking towards the Ohio State player. She bumps into her, and the Ohio State player kind of like shrugs off, like, kind of like, what are you doing? And they call the Ohio State player for a technical foul. Like, there's just some of these, like, where you're like, okay, I know she's a superstar. I know they get special treatment, but this is absurd. That's not to take away from, she's great. I'm not saying she's not, but she definitely gets the star treatment and beyond from the officials.
I did hear somebody call her the Taylor Swift of women's college basketball.
I don't what I do we just mean that she's really popular? Is that what we mean?
Yeah, and it's kind of like a spectacle, drawing crowds everywhere she goes, sort of
Okay.
that idea.
Sure. On a sadder note, legendary NFL reporter, ESPN insider, even Chris Mortensen
Yeah, really
passed away.
the original insider, right?
Yeah.
Like maybe Peter Gammons in baseball, but yeah, Chris Mortensen, Anytime he came up on ESPN for the longest time, and then was joined by Adam Schefter a little bit later. Chris Mortensen was the guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot
So
of
that's a
fond
set.
memories of Mort.
Yeah.
Fond memories of Mort in my childhood.
Yeah. March Madness. We're 2 weeks away from the brackets.
I think I restarted it. Did you get the email?
Maybe.
Okay. I believe I restarted it and hit send email to all previous people.
Okay.
So it should
Well,
be out there.
I'll have to look.
We can put the invite in the show notes of today's episodes
That
for
would be good. Yeah.
today's episode for people.
That'd be good. And one last sports note. The Grace College men's basketball team plays for the Crossroads League tournament title tonight. It
For the
would
second year in a
be,
row.
yeah, tonight, as in when this episode drops. Third year.
Third year in a row.
Third year. They're going for three straight. So they will take on the dreaded Indiana Wesleyan Wildcats. So it's what's disappointing is that this is happening over Grace's spring break. So you're not going to have the student crowd that you would.
Yeah, I was at the game. Was that Wednesday last week? I was at the game, and it was not the best attended game I've seen. And I think that's due to the start of spring break in there.
Yeah, well, Wednesday was also that night game was the night before the last day of classes for the term. So some people had already left.
Had already left, and other people had finals.
Exactly. And so the crowd was not robust on as robust on Saturday either. So we shall see. But they have already been confirmed as one of the teams that will host a opening round pod. And assuming they win their pod, they would advance to the Sweet 16 in Kansas City.
Okay.
Are you going to be able to work connections to be able to get to go to that for some advancement purpose?
My territory is east of Warsaw, so I don't know if they were playing Columbus or Madison Square Garden or something. I could work a way to get there, but Kansas City is a little bit more difficult.
Gotcha. All right, John, ready to move on?
Sure.
Today we continue our series on the Christ hymns in Paul's letters. And just as a reminder for folks, we've already talked about Philippians 2, 5 through 11. We've talked about Colossians 1, 15 through 20. And this third one today is a little shorter. And these, again, they're called hymns as a sort of scholarly shorthand that's not saying that they're confident that early Christians were singing these actually as songs. But they function at some level as sort of mini creedal statements, mini confessional statements that capture important aspects of Christ's identity and his work.
And we're almost most certainly repeated by churches, right? I mean, almost certainly repeated by Christian, the early church.
Yeah, I mean, I think the scholarship tends to favor that Paul did not write these, but is quoting them, adopting them into his writings, in part because they were a common reference point for the early Christians. So, yeah, our last one that we're doing is found in First Timothy, and it's actually just one verse.
Yeah, just a single verse.
Yeah, so a little shorter. So John, why don't you go ahead and read that, and
Okay.
we'll s start our discussion.
Yeah, so 1 Timothy 3:16. Great indeed, we confess, is the mystery of godliness. He was made manifested in the flesh, vindicated by the Spirit, seen by angels, proclaimed among the nations, believed on In the World, taken up its glory.
All right, so there it is. A little shorter than the other
two. Real quick.
Yeah. A series of six kind of rapid fire short statements about Christ. But we should probably, before we dive into the specifics, look at the larger context. So John, what's going on here in the larger context of 1 Timothy chapter 3?
I mean, in the letter in general, I mean, he's writing it to Timothy. Paul is writing this to Timothy, right? His sort of his protege or his mentee, if you will, that he has installed in a local church to work there. And he's giving him several pieces of advice, several pieces of direction of what to do. And chapter 3 specifically, he's giving him like, install overseers like this, install deacons like this, coming out of that, he's talking about coming to visit Timothy as well.
The majority of chapter 3 up to this point is dealing with those qualifications for elders, for deacons, and then he comes out of that really with a statement that leads directly into the Christ hymn here. He says in verse 15, if I delay, you may know how one ought to behave in the household of God, which is the church of the living God, a pillar and buttress of the truth. And then that leads into the Christ hymn.
Hmm.
And so, he's kind of bringing them back to, this is the core of our confession that forms the identity of the household of God. It's holding to these truths that makes you part of the household of God and sets off parameters of who's in and who's out when it comes to being a member of the household of God. So let's start with actually that introduction. Great indeed, we confess, is the mystery of godliness. What do you think he's, why do you think he uses that phrase mystery of godliness? What are you trying to get at with that expression?
Man, that's a good question. I'm not totally certain. Seems to be that that the process of godliness, according to Paul, seems to be something that's slightly hidden, so something that can't be fully known about how this takes place or how this is going on. But that's just, I mean, honestly, that's just my cursory sort of guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, as a general rule, I think mystery, as Paul uses it, tends to have the sense of something that was hidden but has now been revealed. So hidden in the old, revealed in the new. And then that term godliness, that's such a key term throughout the whole, really through all the pastoral epistles. The sense of a God-oriented life, a God-directed life, a life that is oriented in every aspect towards God and his ways. And you know, when you, I think what's kind of surprising to me, at least, is when I read this, you know, if I try to put myself in the shoes of, let's pretend I've never read it before.
Okay.
And I hear that expression, you know, great is, great indeed, we confess, is the mystery of godliness. I'm probably expecting something that is more specifically oriented towards, how do I live as a Christian? When I hear that term godliness, that's what I'm thinking about. And it's used in that way in other contexts in the pastoral epistles.
Yeah.
And yet he doesn't give us anything directly about, here's how you live the Christian life. It's, here's who Jesus is. Here's what he did. And I think that's an important point because it shows us that the core of godliness is not actions that we do. It's not spiritual disciplines. It's not specific actions of do this, don't do this, which those have a place for sure. But at the core of godliness is knowing who Jesus is, because he's the full revelation of who God is. And if you embrace and confess this is true about Jesus, that's the starting point for a God-oriented life. And the specifics of things like live this way and don't live this way flow out of, as a starting point, well, you have to know who Jesus is. You have to know Jesus personally in order to live a godly life. So let's go through the six phrases. We'll have to go quickly here.
So real quick, Matt, on these six phrases, what do you, is there anything to be made of them that they are not active? Like they're not something Jesus is actively doing, right? He was manifested. He was vindicated, seen, proclaimed, believed on, taken up. That he's not doing that. Is there anything significant there? Or am I just reading this incorrectly?
Are you asking about the significance of the passive voice or of the past tense verbs?
I'm asking more about the passive voice, but I did notice that they're all past tense as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I think ironically, by phrasing it this way, you actually still keep the focus on him, even though each line has something related to some other entity, right?
Yeah.
You know, so every line is in some more or less dealing with who Christ is and how that has an impact on some certain entity. That's kind of the pattern there. And so I think by phrasing it this way, you still keep the focus on this is who Jesus is, and then it's in relation to these other entities. That'd be my guess.
Okay. You want to run through the six here?
Yeah. I'll just say briefly, there's a lot of scholarly discussion about the best way to understand the structure of this. And I think, to me, the most persuasive is to see these as a series of statements in progression, that there's a sort of historical progression in view. Now, we'll get to, you know, that there's some question about how that works when you get towards the end of the Christ hymn. But let's start with that first line.
All right. Manifested in the flesh.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think pretty clearly emphasizing his incarnation, that he was a fully human being. So he was obviously God and yet took on flesh to dwell among his people. So I think pretty clearly a focus on his incarnation there.
All right, the second one there, vindicated by the Spirit or in the Spirit?
Yes. That one, I think, is a little trickier in the sense that I think the sense is that Jesus' identity was vindicated by the Spirit at work in and through him, that the Spirit performed miracles and such to verify or vindicate his claims as to who he was, and perhaps maybe even a specific focus on the baptism, where the Spirit descends at Jesus' baptism in the form of a dove upon him.
Now, if you know, like a good Bible student, I have my ESV open, and I have a footnote there next to vindicated that says justified.
Yep.
Does that impact your reading in any way?
No, I mean that the Greek verb there, when we hear the word justify, we tend to think of a legal declaration.
Sure.
And yet it can also be used in the sense of to prove something to be right. That's what vindicate means. So in this context, it's not declared to be right in the sense of, you know, like you and I have been justified by faith in Jesus. This is to prove to be right by evidence, basically, by evidence produced by the Spirit. I think that's the sense there.
Okay. Number three, by angels.
Yes, yeah, seen by angels. Yeah,
This feels
this one's
weird.
cryptic to me, to be honest. I think, you know, again, when I think about places perhaps where you might see this backed up in the Gospels, now this would run against sort of the sort of historical progression, but you do think of, you know, at the announcement of Jesus' birth to the shepherds, you have the heavenly host appearing and singing the praises of God before the shepherds. But yeah, I there seems to be a pretty consistent pattern in this hymn of not a contrast, but two realms, basically, the earthly realm and the heavenly realm. So, earthly realm manifested in the flesh, vindicated by the Spirit, seen by angels. So, there's a reference more to the heavenly realms, the spiritual realms. And you're going to see that come back, I think, again in the next chunk of three lines as well.
So you mentioned his birth narrative as seen by angels. I most naturally thought of his temptation narrative where he was at the end of it ministered to by angels in the Gospels.
Yeah, that's in Luke. Yep. Yeah,
So
not all the gospel accounts like that. That's one of the Lucan details there. But yeah, that works too. I mean, and Luke also, I think it's Luke, talks about how angels ministered to Jesus in Gethsemane as he's praying. So, you know, again, I don't think these. I think we need to be careful about being over specific. I think these are more generalized statements, less intended to be exact points in time than they are characteristic of Jesus' life, ministry, death, resurrection, etc.
Well, you know how I like to get specific, Matt. All right, let's move on to number four here. Proclaimed among nations.
Yeah, so I think you could argue, and again, this is where some of the potential historical progression breaks down. Is this just a reference to during his life that even Gentiles were told about him? He had Gentiles coming to him to hear him preach. Or, you know, I think we're probably most naturally inclined to think in terms of kind of what happens after his ascension, where the gospel in the book of Acts starts to literally go to the ends of the earth. But either is fine. I mean, I think, again, general statements rather than pointing to one specific event. But I think the term nations is probably significant there, again, capturing both Jew and Gentile.
I mean, I most naturally, and I've been listening to this podcast, The Rest of History. Have you heard of this podcast?
No.
It's Tom Holland, not the guy that plays Spider-Man, but the historian, the Oxford historian.
Yes, I am familiar with him.
And he just had a podcast on Carthage and how Carthage really comes from the Phoenicians, Sidon. And it made me think of the passage in Luke where Jesus is preaching and people from Tyre and Sidon are coming down to be healed.
Yeah.
That's what that reminded me of. Anyway, number five, believed on in the world. That's a unique phrase there. You got back prepositions.
Yeah, I mean, the idea believed on. So that just kind of to me takes the next step of not just proclaimed, but believed on, or really say believed in. Basically, that the proclamation of Christ has been believed and recognized in the realm of sinners. Again, here's where I think you're getting a contrast that's set up when you use the term world. I think you're setting up a contrast between sort of this world and the heavenly realms.
Yeah, it would have been weird to say believed in the world. You know, it would have been double in. And then finally, number six here, taken in glory.
So taken up in glory, and this is where I think people have probably the biggest difficulty with the sort of historical progression in light of, if this just refers to the ascension, then you're probably most naturally thinking about what, then you're like, well, wait a minute, what about those other two that seem this seems to happen, the ascension happens primarily before there's widespread proclamation and being believed on in the world. But I think if you go beyond the ascension and think of this in terms of Christ's exaltation in heaven itself, kind of like the Philippians 2 thing, right? That every knee will bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, every tongue confess that Jesus is Lord to the glory of God the Father, that kind of thing. I think it's I think that's probably the contrast between even as he's being believed upon in the world, the heavenly realms are recognizing and affirming his glorious status.
And that's it. That's everything.
I mean, it's pretty remarkable, and this is part of what the beauty of these Christ hymns accomplish is there's so much theology and significance packed into such a short amount of words, right? You got these, these are just power-packed expressions that beg to be unpacked a little bit more, and not just unpacked so that there's some sort of bare understanding, but to be reflected on, to be marveled at, to be wondered at. And I think, that's part of the introduction there, right? Great indeed, we confess, is the mystery of godliness. It's not just that these are deeply intellectual things, it's that they should cause us to wonder that this is true of Christ, and this is the Christ that we know.
Yeah, even like all of these things have some element of mystery. Them, he's manifest in the flesh. How on earth did that work? What were the mechanics of that? Or vindicated by the Spirit in his earthly ministry? Like, yeah, humans saw this, were able to read about it, but how? Seen by angels, proclaimed among the nations. I mean, we're talking about spiritually dead people becoming alive again. That's a big deal. And then taken up in the glory. I mean, the people who were there just sat there and stared up for a while. There's elements of mystery that come with everything here. So.
For sure. For sure. All right, John, you ready to move on?
Sure.
Time now for this day in sports history.
All right, this day in sports history, March 5th, also triple star day at Starbucks. So if you use your Starbucks app, you'll get triple the stars on March 5th. Or at least I will. I signed up on my app today.
Well, there you go again, John, giving away free advertising on our large platform.
Massive platform. But triple stars, it's a big deal. Anyway, if you know, you know. 1962, Dutch speed skater Atje Kuylen Dijkstra becomes the women's all-around world champion at Heerenveen, Netherlands, her second title in 3 years. I would like to say I got 40% of the words right in that sentence.
Yeah, I think the J, my guess is maybe has the Y sound. So Atia Kulin Dielstra be my guess.
Okay.
That'd be my guess.
Okay. It's 1972. 1993, Boston Celtic Larry Bird undergoes back fusion surgery. That doesn't sound good.
No, and I mean, he had been bothered by that back for a while, and then once he had that surgery, he was never the same. I mean,
Yeah.
we talked about LeBron's longevity, and Larry Bird, obviously one of the all-time greats. His numbers and career would have been even more impressive if he had not had such ongoing back issues.
Yeah. 2016, Mekhi Mason scores 22 points to lead Yale to a 71-55 victory over Columbia, clinching the Bulldogs' first NCAA men's tournament bid since 1962.
That's a drought.
That's quite a
Fif
drought.
54 years. That's amazing.
That's quite some time.
Yeah.
Mekhi Mason. They run the Princeton offense there at Yale.
If they do, I'm sure they don't call it that.
Yeah, you're probably right. 2022, LeBron James, who we've already spoken about today, scored 56 points in a 124-116 win over the Golden State Warriors. LeBron becomes the second oldest player in NBA history to score 55 plus points. Who is the oldest player?
You know, I knew you were going to ask that, and I the source that I looked at did not have that, and so I didn't
Okay.
bother to go on.
Well, we talked about mystery in the passage, and
That's right.
there's some mystery here too. 23, just a year ago, Caitlin Clark, who we also talked about in this episode, records a game of 30 points, 17 assists, and 10 rebounds in the Big Ten tournament final for Iowa against Ohio State.
She's been dominant for the last several years.
17 assists. That's very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the definition of the offense running through you when you score 30 and then you have 17 assists. I mean, that's
Oh, yeah.
so, I mean, speaking of that, one thing I did see as people, we talked earlier about people comparing her to Pete Maravich, and it's kind of an apple and orange, apples and oranges kind of comparison.
Yes, I agree.
But someone did point out Maravich was averaging like 30, 34, 35 shots a game. And Caitlin Clark averages like 20, 22 shots a game.
Yeah.
Now, again, there was no 3-point line. And people are estimating that had there been one, he'd have scored another 10 points a game, probably.
Yeah, it's
Like just
wild.
ridiculous. So anyway, who do you like out of this list?
Oh goodness. Kind of like Mekhi Mason scoring 22. I don't know. I mean, I really don't like Larry Bird's back surgery. I'm not a big speed skater guy.
You're just saying that because you can't pronounce the name.
I don't know. Who do you like? Who
I would probably go with Caitlin Clark in light of the significance of what happened this weekend as
Okay.
well. So,
We can go Caitlin Clark.
all right. One thing you liked.
All right, so in the last week or so, I finished the book Dune, the original book.
So just the first one in the series.
Yeah, just the first one
Okay.
in the series that the movie that the two-part movie is based on that one book.
Okay.
So it's a good story. It's interesting.
Yeah, I read the whole series when I was like, gosh, probably sixth grade.
It's weird. It's super weird. What a weird premise.
Well, I mean, it's I am curious to go back and read it again just because It has a messianic character.
Oh,
I think,
yes.
there are those sorts of things that would pique my interest to some degree. So, but did you see the first movie?
I did. I had to watch it twice because I didn't understand it. It was before I read the books. Book.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you see the movie?
I did not.
It's on, well, you don't have Netflix, but it's on
I
Netflix right
do.
now.
I do have Netflix. So,
Oh.
yeah, picked it back up. But yeah, I do want to watch it. Yeah, I everybody that I've seen mention Dune 2 on social media has said it's an amazing movie. So.
Yeah, that's what I've heard is that it's incredible. And I'm pretty excited to see it, to tell you the truth. I'm really
Is
looking
that
forward
something
to it.
that Andrea will watch with you, or you got to? Okay.
Oh yeah, she'll watch. She watched the first one with me. She also did not understand it, but she watched it a second time and I think understood it better.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go with a book that I just finished this weekend by Rebecca McLaughlin. Confronting Christianity, 12 Hard Questions for the World's Largest Religion. She's a gifted writer, great thinker, and has a bunch of different chapters on key kind of claims that critics make about Christianity. Isn't Christianity anti-woman? Isn't Christianity basically, well, how do Christians respond to the presence of suffering in the world? How do we explain that? Like a lot of the common apologetics issues that might come up, but it's written in such a thoughtful, conversational way that it's not a dry apologetics textbook, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I read her Secular Creed, which feels
That's
like it's
also very good.
this from like the other side of the coin. But similar themes. But yeah, she's a great writer. We'd love to have her on campus.
And we've tried.
We have tried. We
I
have
know that
tried.
very well, yes. So that was my one thing I liked. All right, John, we have talked about your travels to South Carolina. We have talked some pro and college basketball. We've talked about the Christ hymn in 1 Timothy 3. We have talked about Caitlin Clark. We've talked about Dune, and we've talked about Rebecca McLaughlin confronting Christianity. And so I think, by definition, we have covered our various and sundry topics. So all that's left to say is, until next time, the Lord bless you all real good.
Later.